School of the Master, Lecture 13 of 14, Living as a Master. School of the Master, Lecture 13 of 14, Living as a Master. Now, for 12 lessons now, 12 lectures, we've been talking about the School of the Master. We've been talking about how we might live in the School of the Master, how we might conduct ourselves in the School of the Master, how we might conduct ourselves in life. Now, what have we learned? Have we learned living as a master? How does a master live? Well, look at yourself, because you are a master. You are a master that is revealed. You are a master that is fulfilled. You are a master that is accomplished. Now, yesterday we talked about awareness of the divine. And today we're talking about living as a master. A divine master, a divine person who lives to his highest and best every moment that he can, is... And living as a master like that is being very special. All of us have a tendency to think that we are number one, that we are the best, that we are fantastic. But we also have the tendency, while we think that, we don't believe it. We do not believe that we are number one. We do not believe that we're the master. We do not believe that we're the best. We do not believe that we are fantastic. We do not believe that we are desirable. We do not believe that. Now, why, after all of our studies and all of our awarenesses and all of our understanding of the principle, why do we say that we are not number one? We are not fantastic. We are saying that because of the evidence that we give. Now, if I say to you, tell me how much 2 times 2 is, and you answer...
4.
No, you don't. You say, 2 times 2 is 4. I don't want an off-the-wall answer that could be for any question at all. I want an answer to the question that we asked. So always reiterate the question and then give the answer. Always. When you're talking to people, I am number one. Why am I number one? I'm number one because I am the one who lives in my body. Well, big deal. I live in my body, others say to you. Well, that's fine. You're number one in your body and I'm number one in my body. Now, I would like you to have a glass of schnapps with me. And you say, I'm sorry, but I don't want that. Well, why do you say you're sorry? You just say, no, thank you. Or you say, we want to get you to this state of awareness in the School of the Master here, that you create everything that happens in your life by your choice. People cannot offer you a glass of schnapps if you don't drink schnapps. They cannot offer it to you if you don't drink it. But if you see people offering it to you, or you can go into a bar, and the bartender looks at you and he says, you're Shirley Temple, aren't you? And you say, yes, I am, thank you. And he fixes you a non-alcoholic drink called a Shirley Temple. And you drink it. He knows you. He knows you because he reads his customers. He's not interested in selling anything to his customers or not selling. He is interested in serving his customers. And he serves his customers by knowing his customers. Now, does the bartender drink? Perhaps and perhaps not. If he does drink, and he drinks while on duty, he's not very effective. If he doesn't drink and he's a bartender, he might not be an effective bartender because he doesn't know what type of drinks are really best to be served. So, what are we going to do? Are you living as a master? Why would you create yourself to be a bartender if you don't drink? Why would you create yourself to do anything in this life that you do not approve of? Now, if you don't drink and you approve of drinking, then you make a good bartender, perhaps, but the thing is, you don't. Who are you? You're number one. You're number one. Can anyone ask you to do anything in your life which is contrary to your number one awareness of yourself? No. You do not create that. Now, oh, Herb, come on now. I go into a bar and everybody's drinking. They're all going to think I'm going to drink. Why? Because you think that. They don't think that. If you think they want you to drink, then they will want you to drink. If you don't think, and you don't even think of drink. I'm just coming in to get a glass of water. I'm just coming in to get a hamburger. I'm just coming in to do whatever. They don't even offer you a drink. The bartender, the waiter doesn't even offer you an alcoholic beverage. The waiter says, here's the menu. What choice would you like? Would you like some iced tea? The waiter knows right away where you are because you shine it out. You see, when you're a master, you're living as a master. And you're living as a master every single moment, taking charge of your life, taking charge of your thought. So everybody in your world knows what you're thinking because you created them. You created them aware of who you are. You created them in harmony with who you are, harmonious with every thought that you think. You created them that way. Now, how did you go about creating them that way? Very simply. You created them that way because that's who you are. Do you believe in yourself? Do you like yourself? Do you always do things that make you happy? Or do you do sometimes things that don't make you happy? Have you ever said to yourself, oh, I'm out of change. Do you have any money? I'm out of change. Do you have any change? You know, why would you say something like that? You're never out of change. You always have exactly what you want. But you're out of change when you think you're out of change because you're out of change. But you're not really out of change. Because if you were to go at the bottom of your purse, you'd find all the change you want there. It all filters down to the bottom of your purse. Well, now, why do we do things like that? Why do we lie to ourselves? We spoke the other day about this lady who had cancer and that she wanted the doctor to lie and say to the people that it was a misdiagnosis. Did she want the doctor really to lie? Or did she want the doctor to tell the people the truth? Did she now have a different opinion about herself? Did she now have a different opinion that she's whole and perfect? Did she have an opinion of herself that this cancer is now released from her experience? It's no longer in her life. The cancer is no longer in her experience. She had that attitude. And having that attitude, what did she do? She told the doctor, please tell my family that this was a misdiagnosis. And the doctor thought to himself, I didn't misdiagnose. But the doctor said, it's her last wish, and she's terminal, and she's dying. I must say what she asks. So he said to the family, as sincerely as possible, your grandma is okay. It's a misdiagnosis. She'll be all right. And everybody looked at her, and they saw this shriveled up excuse for a woman. They saw this ill person. They saw, but they stopped seeing it the minute the doctor said it was a misdiagnosis. They stopped seeing it the minute the doctor spoke the truth about her from her point of view and from what she wanted. Now, that's rather dramatic. That's rather powerful. That's rather outstanding. Could you do such a thing? Could you, in the face of all appearances, say, all is in divine order? Could you, with your car zooming along the highway toward a crash, where a person is driving on the wrong lane and you're going to bump right into them and you're going to really have a crash, say, all is in divine order? In an instant, the person swerves out of the way and you swerve out of the way, and there's not even a near miss. All is in divine order. You do not empower the negative circumstance. You empower the positive circumstance. You are the master. You're a living master. Every moment you're given opportunities to prove that you're a living master. And it's not really to prove you're a living master. You're given opportunities to show you to have confidence in yourself, to show you that as you're living these circumstances and as you're living these experiences, they do not control you. You are in control of them. And so you see a friend, and she's drowning. And you say, all is in divine order. And a dolphin comes up underneath her, lifts her out of the water. Is that possible? Mm-hmm. Oh, you betcha it's possible. Have people ever believed it was possible? Not until they saw the movies on it. When they saw the movies of the dolphins saving people who were drowning and things like that, wow, I'm going to swim where the dolphins swim. No, you don't need to, because you're not going to have drowning in your consciousness. But how does the master think? A master says, it's done. All is in divine order. The master does not say the dolphin is going to lift the drowning person out of the water. The master does not say how. Whatever is the highest and best for you and for everyone in your world, the master never says what is the highest and best. What is the highest and best is there always. Is there always taking place? Is there always revealing itself? Now, how do you show yourself that you're living as a master? Do you walk into your house and do you look around your house and you think, what a lovely house I have. What a lovely house I have. But sure is dusty. What a lovely house I have. Carpets need cleaning. What a lovely house I have. Oh my, spilt the dog food, the cat food and stuff. What a lovely house I have. If you walk into your house and you are a master, what would a master see? A master would see a perfectly orderly house. A master would see everything in divine order. A master could not see any imperfection in the house. A master could not. If the master allowed itself one little imperfection, choing, the whole house would be a mess. In fact, it'd probably burn up. We destroy our world by our thought. We are ready to show the world that we live as a master. How? By how we live. Now, how do you live? Do you live every day of your life saying, I like me, I like me, I like me? Do you live every day of your life saying, I am a good creator? I created my family. I created my grandchildren. I created my children. I created every one of them ideal, flawless. Oh, what a deal. What a problem you put on top of them. What a problem to be flawless. You put that on top of your your family. You call them flawless? Well, perhaps the word is badly chosen. I'll change it. My family are perfect. Well, what's the difference between flawless and perfect? Well, flawless means they have no flaws. They have no imperfections. Perfect means they're perfect. Perfect doesn't bring into it have no. Perfect doesn't bring into it the need for improvement. When you are perfect, you are perfect. There's nothing to improve. There's nothing to go better. You're the ideal. You're the ideal chauffeur. There's no better chauffeur on the road than you are. You're ideal. You see, and so when we teach ourselves to say that we're ideal, when we teach ourselves to be ideal, when we teach ourselves to live as ideal beings, what are we doing? When we're teaching ourselves to live as ideal beings, what we are doing is we are speaking our word as a master, living in our master consciousness, in our ideal consciousness. Now, would you like to be the best master on earth? Would you like to be the most complete master on earth? Would you like to be the guru of gurus? Would you like to be the Jesus Christ or the Buddha? Would you like to be any one of these outstanding beings? Would you like to be any one of them? Would you? And the answer is no, because that's not your thing. If you would like to be like them, you'd be them. because you are them. Right now, you are whoever you think about. So you're thinking about Einstein. Well, now you're Einstein. You're Einstein. You're thinking Einsteinian thoughts. You're thinking thoughts about physics, about mathematics. You're thinking thoughts about government. You're thinking thoughts. Yeah, he was asked to be the president of Israel. And what did he say? No, thank you. He says, that's not my thing. Would he have made a good president? No. He was not interested in Israel. He was not against Israel. What was he interested in? The allness. Einstein could not confine himself to just one nation, one country, one attitude. He was all. He was a universal person. He was a universal being. And as a universal being, he created in his mind all in divine order. Yeah. Did he try to curb the use of the atomic bomb? Yes. He went to President Roosevelt and he says, that's a terrible thing. Try not to use that. That's not a beneficial thing. It's a threat, but it's also a terror. It's also worse than anything we could ever do. And it was. But why did he go to the president and say that? Why didn't he just sit in his laboratory or in his room or in his living room and say, all is in divine order now? He was a master. But you see, he lived in a world in which he felt he had to contribute by speaking out. He lived in a world in which he felt that unless he would put something down in writing, unless he backed up the books that he has written and the lectures he had given, unless he backed it up by going to see the president, he wasn't doing what he should do and could do. Well, even masters have their Achilles heel. Even masters have their areas where they miss the boat and don't realize that they don't have to do that. They don't have to do that. Living as a master is such an interesting thing. It's not cold. It's not lonely. It's not by yourself. It's with all. A master is one as all. A master sees all in divine order. Hey, he sees all in divine order. Then who's he missing? Everybody's included in that. A master sees everyone as his reflection. Who is there to change and who's there to work on? His reflection is the reflection of a master. Oh, what a responsibility that puts on him. No. You don't have a responsibility to be a girl because you're a girl. You are a girl. And you act like a girl, you live like a girl, you express like a girl, and you're great. You don't have the responsibility to be a man just because you have a man's body. That's who you are. There's no responsibility there. That's who you are. Now, if you pretend that you're not, if you pretend you are not who you are, then you have a responsibility to remember what you were pretending. Mm-hmm. You have to remember. And if you lie, you have to remember what you're lying. Like Our Lady, who was dying of cancer, she was unhappy with her world, unhappy with herself, and she felt miserable, and she just, life's not worth living. And then when she was asked the question, do you want to live? She says, well, yeah, I would, you know. Well, then, let's change your attitude from that of a loser to a winner. Change your attitude from that of death to life. And so she changed her attitude. And when she changed her attitude, she changed her experience. Now, you and I can have that same experience. You say, well, I would not like to have anything that dramatic in my life. You have things more dramatic than that all the time. Every time we have a thought that goes through our mind that says, we are not nice people, that's dramatic. That's terrible. That is denying everything that's good and beautiful about you and your world. Every time you have a thought that goes through your mind that says, I can't do it, I can't handle anymore. Or every time you have a thought, this is a really killer. Every time we have a thought that goes through our mind that says, why me, O Lord? Why do I have this problem? Why do I have this illness? Why do I have this bad relationship? Why do I have this life that's just going to the dogs? And that's not very nice. Why do I have this life that's going down? Why do I have it? Why do I have this life? Well, if you don't know, you're not the kind of master you think you are. Because living as a master, you know everything. Where do you know everything from? I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer. Now, could the divine in you, in me, in anyone ever guide them to make a mistake? Could the divine in anyone ever guide them to make something non-beneficial to themselves or to the world? Could the divine in us ever show us an improper way to do anything? Or does the divine in us at all times show us our highest and best, show us the way to go that's going to lead us into our fullness of life, into the happiness that we are, into the goodness that we are? Is the divine in us going to always do that? Yes. That doesn't mean we're listening. The divine in us is always going to show us. But that doesn't mean we're listening. Now, how do we learn to always, 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 always be listening? How do we learn to always be listening? How do we learn to always be listening to the divine within us and then to follow it? You say to me, oh, Herb, I have so many good ideas. I have so many good thoughts. I have so many beautiful thoughts that I like. Hey, Machnix, I really don't care about your beautiful thoughts. I care about that thought about you that you as a master are carrying out. You say, okay, the world is all going to pot in 100 ways, maybe 1,000, maybe a million. And you say, okay, the world's going to pot. I've got lots of good thoughts on how to put the world back in order. I have lots of good thoughts on how to bring the world back in focus and balance and in right action. This sounds good, doesn't it? Sounds real nice. But you see, a master does not do that. A master says, all is in divine order now. A master says, does not say there's something to remedy, there's something to repair, there's something to make right and to make correct. A master never says that. For if a master were to say that, he would be recognizing the problem. And every time a master recognizes the problem, he is the problem, and the problem exacerbates so tremendously, it's just like a mushroom cloud of an atomic bomb. It's a terribly, terribly, terribly powerful thing. But you and I, as a master, we live like the pure white driven snow. My sister always would say to me, Herbie, who do you think you are, the pure white driven snow? And I never answered her, because that's who I was. But I wasn't the pure white driven snow, because the pure white driven snow wasn't pure enough for me. It had dust in it and other things. Who was I? If she were to say to me, Herbie, who are you? Who do you think you are, the divine? Who do you think you are, God? Now, what could I have answered her when she would ever have asked that question? Because she knew my philosophy. She knew my thinking. She listened to enough of my lectures. She attended church services where I spoke for years and years. She knew all that stuff. And yet she said, who do you think you are, the pure white driven snow? And not once, but many times. Now, I must have been giving her this pure attitude, living in this pure consciousness. But as long as she had that attitude in her mind, what was happening? She was not seeing me pure. Because if she were seeing me as the pure white driven snow, she would be seeing herself like that, which she was, and she would be living it. But she was saying, I can't believe it's true. I can't believe he really is a pure white driven snow. That's my brother. He can't be perfect. He must be like me with my own little inconsistencies. But what is it we're doing? What is it we're doing? We are saying we're living as a master and we're living as a schluck human being. How stupid. How stupid when we know the truth and it could set us free and we don't follow it. How true when we know what the rules of the game are and then we try to rewrite the game. This has always been Ingeborg's program. She always wanted to rewrite the rules of any game we played. Oh, she wanted to play the games. But after a while, she tired because the game no longer was interesting to her. Because she knew those rules. She wanted a new set of rules. She wanted to approach it from a different way. And bless her heart. And so what did we, in our wisdom and in our generosity, say? Okay, what rules would you like? You name the rules and we'll play the game by the rules. We didn't care. We didn't care. Because it was just a game. And whatever the rules were, we'd mind them. We'd tend to the rules. Now, with that in mind, with Ingeborg's rule changing in mind, what do you think? What do you think you are when you say that you're living as a master? What do you think you are when you say you're living as a master? What are you doing? What are you doing? What really are you doing? What makes you think you're so uppity-duppity smart, you know, that you're so wise? You're living as a master. You're so brilliant. You're doing whatever is for your highest and best all the time. What are you doing? My offering to people as they're on the path and working in awareness of their mastership is to say, shut up. Don't say anything to anybody. Don't say anything. Do it from inside yourself. Live from inside yourself. Don't give any advice. Offer only your unconditional love. And your unconditional love, no words can describe it. No words can tell the world what your unconditional love is, but your beingness, your unconditional love tells them. Now, what does your unconditional love tell the world about you? Does it tell the world that you like yourself? Does unconditional love tell the world that you like yourself? Does it say that you have no judgment of anybody? What is that to thee? Follow thou me. Judge not anything. Anything. For with what judgment we judge, so shall we be judged. Unconditional love is no judgment. No judgment whatsoever. All of our life, all of our dimensions of life, we've lived in judgmental dimensions, humanistic judgmental dimensions. And we'll continue living in humanistic judgmental dimensions in eternity until we begin living unconditional love. When we live unconditional love, we do not judge ourselves or anyone else. We merely accept everybody as they are. But that's not as easy as it sounds. When you accept everybody as they are, your eyes are so clear and so pure that you can only see them clear and pure. You don't see any need for change. You don't need any need for growth. Now, just think of this once. You look at a child, and what do you see? You look at a child, and you see a baby. You see an undeveloped fetus. You see an undeveloped child. You see an undeveloped little person. You see, an undeveloped, oh my goodness sake, hate to have you be my mother. See, an undeveloped, no, as a master, you see it done, fulfilled. There is no growth. There is no humanity. There is no growing from age 0 to 99. There's no change. There's no change in the being. It's done. It's done. The life and teachings of the Master of the Far East, when Emil chose to do something, he saw it done. When his mother wanted to set the table for their guests, what did she do? She didn't snap her finger. She just clicked and said, that's what I want. And everything was perfect. And the wine, the wine was the most wonderful non-alcoholic wine that you ever saw in your life. Golden, beautiful. Now, why? It was done. And after the meal, after everybody ate their full fill, you know, and after everything was over and the table was just one cotton picking mess, people got up and then what happened? There was no table. Everything was put away. Everything was done. There was no washing dishes. There were no cleaning up the table. There were no gathering together. Everything was done, perfectly done. And the room was back to being its sitting room that it had been before. Ideal. You see, this is what a master does. At least this is what a developed, aware a master does. I don't want to say ascended master, but what an aware a master does. And aware a master sees it absolutely done right now and perfect. The aware a master see all in divine order. There's nothing to improve. There's nothing to make better. There's nothing to accomplish a higher and better attitude. Now, how do we train ourselves in the art of living as a master, of seeing everything done right now? You see, we're living in a human world, but we're living sort of on the edge, human, divine, you know, very close. Now, how do we live on this divinity? Well, we don't. When you are in your divine attitude, there is no humanness. When you are in your divine attitude, you do not think of humanness at all. You do not think of the developing child. You do not think of the service being put on the table, being taken off the table. You don't think of and traveling from here to there. Why? Because
You're there.
Now, that's not inconceivable to you. That's not inconceivable to us. But it is inconceivable to us because we're not doing it. Why don't we practice it? Why don't we practice being there? Well, we are there. We are there in our thoughts. It's just when we wake up to realize that our body is still here in Campo and our thoughts are over in Lugano, you know. Our body is here in Campo, and our thoughts are over in India with Sai Baba. Our body is here in Campo, and we are traveling around the world, visiting our students in all the countries of the world, blessing them, seeing them as master, which we've been teaching them all along. And as we see them as master, what are they doing? They are master. Now, many of my students find a great deal of umbrage with me because they feel that I am not sensitive to them. They feel that I don't care about them. They feel that I am not loving to them, that I don't want to hear their problems. They feel that I should hear their problems, that I should hear all of the worries that they have because they're not yet masters and they are coming to me because they want to remain human. Well, that's fine. They want to remain human. Okay. Please go to all of the other churches in the world that love human beings. I don't love human beings. I love the divine. I acknowledge we play the human game, but I love the divine. And I see everybody fulfilled now in ideal body, spirit, and work, everything. Absolutely perfect. Everybody who comes to me knows that this is who I am and what I am. Everybody who comes to me knows that I am attempting to share with them their master consciousness. All of them. And they keep coming back. They go away and they shout at me and they put me down and they run me down and they say that I'm just not very nice, not sensitive, not caring about them. And I'm really not caring about them. I am not caring about anything. I just see them as masters, and so therefore there's nothing to care. I see a penny as a penny, and that's what the penny is designed to be, a penny. It's designed to be that coin. Now, if I saw that penny as a $1,000 bill, you'd say, oh, that's nice. No, I see a $1,000 bill, a $1,000 bill, and a penny. Whatever it was designed to be, I see it that way. Now, I don't need the $1,000 bill, and I don't need the penny to use as my medium of exchange. I use my mind as my medium of exchange. I use my thought as my medium of exchange. That's all that exists. Nothing else matters. Nothing else makes any difference. Nothing else makes any difference for the medium of exchange except what I have in my consciousness. Now, how do I work on that? How do I work with people who come to the School of the Master, who come to the University of Healing here in the Absolute Monastery, who come to the Worldwide Healing Ministry, who come to all the programs that we have? How do I deal with them? They want to remain who they were. Of all the students who came recently in the year 2000, whatever it was, 99, for the School of the Master, how many of them have been aware of their divinity after leaving the school or even while being in the school? They could not even play the game. They are humans and they love playing games, but they wouldn't play the game. I said, pretend that I am here alone with you and I ask you for a drink of water. So you bring me a drink of water, and all the hundreds of glasses of water were put in front of me. And you only saw the glasses of water put by your contemporaries. You didn't see all the others. And you didn't realize you were putting one glass on top of another, and they didn't tip over and didn't fall over, because you saw your glass setting firmly on the table. You didn't know. You didn't know that I said to you, you and I are the only ones here. That's the game. That's the game. When you play the game that you and I are the only ones here, then you're living as a master. A master doesn't live in the confusion of a human world, of a human race. Not that the human race is bad or the human world is bad, but the master sees everything in perfect harmony and perfect balance. The master sees everyone playing whatever game they want to play and playing it beautifully. Now, can you play the game beautifully? Can you play the game wonderfully? Can you play the game the way the game is written, or do you want to rewrite the rules like Ingeborg? Now, Ingeborg was not bad. She was being a very normal human being, wanting to play the game, liking the games. Children love games. Adults love games. Everybody loves games. But are you willing to play the game by the rule? What is the purpose of the game? To play from here to here, and then the game is done, right? All right. What does the master do?
It's done.
He sees it done. He doesn't need to play it. Does a master see his golf ball in front of his club and then see it in the hole? He sees it in the hole. He doesn't need to see its journey. He doesn't need to see that his butler picked up the ball and carried it over and put it in the hole. He doesn't need to know it. Or that he has a high-priced gopher and the gopher is in the hole already and shows the ball up in the hole gets underneath it and pushes it up so that you can see in the hole, because he took it there ahead of time. Now, are those games? Sure they are. Is that how people sometimes play the game? To pretend? Pretend that it's there? Well, when you pretend that it's there, then what's the next step? It is there. Now, I'm going to say this to you, and I want you to listen closely. I take my golf club, and I hit the ball, and I put it in the cup. Boop! From the tee to the green tee. And then what happens? I hit the ball from the tee to the green, and it's in the cup. I hit the ball from the tee to the green, it's in the cup. Okay, now, I ignore all the other things. Pop, the ball's in the cup. That's what I want to do. Now, is that what I'm doing? Okay, the little boy, he's 3 days old. Pop! He's whatever. 35, 40 years old. How do you get to be that old? How do you get to be that old? You watch television, and in one television show, you see some actor as a young boy, and then you see another show that follows it about the same actor, and now he's 45 years old, or he's 80 years old, and you see him, and then you compare the two. They look somewhat alike, you know. How did he get from here to here? Well, in the movie screen, in the film, it only takes an instant. And does life take any longer? Living as a master is a lot of fun. It's a beautiful game. But here comes another tremendously important situation. Who is writing the rules of the game? You. Who is writing the rules of the game for any game you want to play? You. Me. Now, at the monastery here, I had the monks who came here. We had quite a number of them. And I had them all work on the rules for the monastery, setting up what they felt would be beautiful rules for the monastery. And, oh my goodness sakes, you'd think they were in a prison. You think that they were in jail, that they were in sick, in a hospital. They were, you know, no good. They wrote those rules so tough, so difficult for anybody. They didn't write them as a school of a master. They wrote them of a school of a bad, 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 bad. And all of those who wrote the rules, and I said, don't write them so hard. Don't make them so difficult. Be more gentle with yourself. Just have them be simple. And so we finally had the simple rules of the house, and that they liked very much. And the rest of it should have been gone for by. But they didn't do it. So they kept all those rules for years, and they all complained about it. And they complained about it. And one of the rules was very difficult for them was sex and marriage. And they felt that they could have sexual experiences on campus when it said no. But what the rule was that they wrote no sexual experiences on campus. It's just that way. And yet they went out and did that. And they weren't bad people, except they were very bad people. They were very bad people to write the rules and to violate them. All you have to do is rewrite them. If the rules are not what you think you want to live your life by, rewrite them. And when you rewrite them, then the rules are going to be living as a master. Because the disciples tried to say Jesus was the king of the Jews and that he was going to do all these wonderful things. He said, no. And he said, I must go so the Comforter can come so that you can walk your own path. and he left them. And so it is with you. If you're going to be a master and you're going to live by the mastership of your own being, then you know what you're doing. Then you're living as a master. Not by rules, not by somebody else's program, not by what the world expects of you, but what you expect of yourself right inside of you. That's all that matters. So today, make this claim for yourself and enjoy it. Live as a master by the rules that you create today. And I love you.